We are going to enjoy our cookies and conversation. I want to welcome everyone to the Wells Built Museum of African American History and Culture. I know we have some first-time visitors. I encourage anyone who's a first-time visitor to come on back and take the full tour and get the full experience. So please come on back when you have a moment. We're here Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And at this moment though, what we are here for currently are cookies and conversation. And I'm going to invite Keith Harris to come and give us an introduction.
Thank you so much. You're pretty clapping for me. Yeah, that was new because I had the common sense to get married to Monica Williams. I appreciate that, family. You know, this is really about family. This whole mission, if you will. I'm gonna talk about that in one quick second. I'm not gonna be long. But this really is about family. The mission that Monica took on, the blessing she has been for me personally, starting when, before we got married, I knew that Monica was going to be a package deal when we got married. I had 3 daughters already, and I knew that she wanted to have a baby. So we courted, and I asked her to marry me, and I knew that, you know, at some point she was gonna want to have a baby, and so we got married, and shortly after we got married, she says to me, you know, I think, you know, God is really dealing with me on what my purpose is. And I'm thinking to myself, your purpose is to be my wife. I don't understand, why is this confusing? So fast forward to, you know, our journey, and I'm not going to take it still in her thunder, and we tried to have a baby, and then of course, you know, Miles came out, and then over time it really became evident when she put pen to paper, was really motivated to write this book, that her purpose really is, and her mission is to bless, you know, our community, especially, and let's change the dialogue around adoption, because we have so many babies that need forever families. So with that, I like to introduce her as a wife, mother, attorney, a practicing attorney, but mostly Miles's mom. We give a warm welcome to my lovely wife, Monica Williams Harris.
Good afternoon, everybody. So, first of all, I'm going to do this. I have a cheat sheet because I like to keep notes to make sure I stay on time because I'm a lawyer and I like to talk. I'm going to move some stuff on the phone. I'm going to sit too because I'm hot. So I want to first thank the Wells Built Museum and Elizabeth Thompson for allowing us to utilize this space today. And we're a small but mighty number, which I think is good because I think it creates more of an intimate conversation. We did our first book talk in Tampa in June, and some of the feedback I got is, I've entitled this Cookies and Conversation, but I'm the only person talking. So, I said, well, this go round, I'm gonna start the, I want it to really be a conversation. So if in the midst of me talking, you do have a question, feel free to raise your hand and interrupt and ask. I wrote the book, I'm an open book. If I don't want to answer a question, I'll be very frank and tell you I don't want to answer a question because it's too personal. Elizabeth will tell you that, my sister will too. But I'm pretty, for all intents and purposes, I wrote the book and I'm open about my story and our journey because I, in hopes of helping somebody else. So the story of how I wrote the book and why I wrote the book are pretty similar. They really kind of converge into one, and they're really based on obedience, faith, and prayer. And so those are the three things. So I'm going to talk about the why I wrote the book first, and then I'll get the how later. When I was about 35, being a mother was something that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to have children. And when I was 35, after my father passed, recently divorced, I go to the doctor, and the doctor tells me that I have what is called unopposed estrogen, which means that I have a short window of time in which to have children, Otherwise, I have to have a hysterectomy because it is a precursor to endometrial cancer. That's what the doctor told. That's what that doctor told me. And so I remember sharing that with my mom, and my mother was, well, where did he get his medical degree from? Did he get it out of a Cracker Jack box? What does he mean? So that was resting on my spirit. I wasn't married, just lost my dad, recently divorced, and in my mind I'm thinking this doctor's telling me that if you want to have children, there's a short window of opportunity for you to do it, and I had no options. And so fast forward, reconnect with Keith, we're friends, we fall in love, decide to get married, and what he's saying in terms of me, him having having children on the table was absolutely was make it or break a deal. And my mother will share that when he asked her for my hand in marriage, she said, you know, I know Monica's told you that she's open to maybe not having kids, but that's a lie. And I cannot give you my blessing unless I know that you're on board to at least attempt to have children. And so back, you know, rewinding back, the doctor didn't tell me I couldn't have children. He just told me that if you wanted to have children, a short window of opportunity to do it. And so Keith and I got married in 2013, attempted to try to have children in 2014, and decided to go the IVF route, because in our minds, that was kind of potentially a sure thing. And so if anybody's gone through the IVF process, it's an extremely emotionally, physically, and spiritually taxing situation. And it's not cheap, it's expensive. So I remember when we first started, when I did my talking TAMP, I didn't go in details I'm going to do now because your little baby's present, but the only one that's present is mine, and he's not even in here. I remember when we first went to the IVF doctor, they do this number of tests, and we were getting a box with all my medicines in it, and it was this high, filled with needles, filled with medicine, and I'm terrified of needles. So to have an appreciation for how focused I was on having children, I was willing to inject myself with whatever the doctor told me I needed to inject myself with, forever how long he told me I needed to inject myself. So we went through the first IVF cycle, and that was unsuccessful. And I was okay with that because we prayed. We said, you know, God, this is what we want. You know, I want to be a mom. You know, we want to be parents. We want to have this child together. And even if it doesn't happen the first time, I know that it could potentially happen the second time. So I said, I'm just going to eat better, exercise, rest, eliminate stress, whatever I need to do to ensure that this process is successful. We did the IVF the first time, unsuccessful, do it the second time. And this time I was focused. I didn't move. When they did the transfer, I didn't move. I think I was in bed for 4 days. I didn't move my feet. I didn't answer the phone. I did nothing. I may have put my feet up in the air and said, maybe if I put my womb up in the air, it'll plant itself a little bit deeper. And then I remember the way they do the IVF process is it's very impersonal. So you have a transfer, and then when they call you on the phone. They don't bring you back in the office to tell you whether or not you're pregnant or not. It's a phone call. And so I remember my mom was in town, my aunt was in town, Keith was obviously there, and we went to lunch. And I was sitting at the table with my husband and my mom and my aunt. And they called Keith, because I think Keith may have called and said, don't call her, because the first time they called me at work. The second time, Keith said, call me. And so we're all sitting at the table, and I can tell by the look on his face that it was a no. I'm going to get emotional because this is an emotional journey. It was a no, and so I remember him, however he finished the conversation, and he turned to me and he said, you know, in his beautiful way, that it didn't work this time. I lost it. Because for me, as a faithful person, if I prayed and I'm asking God for something, I truly believe that God will grant you the desires of your heart. And so for me, I was wondering, what have I done? Why isn't it working for me? I prayed, I'm going to church, I'm tithing, I'm doing all the things that they tell you when you are active in your faith that you're supposed to do, and it still wasn't successful. And I was mad, and I was angry. If I'm honest, I was probably a little bit depressed. And I remember very specifically questioning God, asking him why me, and then being angry and looking at other women who were having children very easily having multiple children, having children and not taking care of them. And in my mind, as bad as it sounds, I was judging and saying, you're making people mothers who don't, in my mind, deserve to be mothers. Which is a very bad space to be in, but I'm being honest and being transparent. That's how I was feeling. And so then we had to make a decision, and this is November 2014. We had to make a decision about whether or not we were going to do IVF for a third time. And as you remember, I told you, IVF, you're filling yourselves with all types of steroids. Estrogen, testosterone, getting blood tests. It's very invasive. And so I had to make a decision about whether or not, and I say my decision because from my husband's perspective, this was my body. And so whether or not I was willing to put myself through this again was ultimately going to be my decision. He wasn't going to, he had an opinion, but he wasn't going to push that opinion on me. And so I prayed and said, you know, I'm bloated, I'm irritable. My husband will tell you I probably was really difficult to live with, more than normal. And so I said, I'm not sure what our next option is. I know I want to be a mom. And I'm keeping this really good way, saying, beautiful way, saying, you know, babe, your prayer was that you'd be a mother and be a parent. Your prayer was not that you'd be pregnant. There's a difference. There's a reason why this is not happening. There are black women now who are dying during childbirth. There's a reason why God's protecting you from going through this process. Your prayer was to be a mother, not to be pregnant, and so that rested on my spirit. And I said, okay, well, if that's the case, then there are other options. And so adoption is something that Keith and I had thought about and talked about before we did IVF, but kind of talked about it in passing because we weren't really sure kind of what that looked like. And then at the same time, we spent money on IVF. In my mind, it's like you going to the store, you giving people your money, and you're not getting back what you paid for. So I wanted either return on my investment or I wanted my money back. That's not the way it worked, but that was my mindset. And so then in December of 2014, I remember going home, and God had put it in my heart and said, you're supposed to adopt. You all are supposed to adopt. And so I went home and we had a family conversation, and I said, you know, I think I'm open to adoption. And my husband told me recently, he was like, I was just so happy that you said that, because I don't think I could have done another cycle with you. He said, you know, I know that's what you wanted, but I wasn't willing to see you put your body under that type of pressure and strain again, and it still end up the same way. And so my mom was, apparently everybody had a conversation about whether or not Monica should do IVF again. I guess I was super miserable to be around, period. So the desire was for me, I guess everybody's collective prayer with me outside of that was that we go the adoption route. And so that's what we did. And so in December 31st, Watch Night Service, we're at church. And Keith and I, this is 2014 going into 2015, Keith and I said our collective prayer. And our collective prayer was that 2015 would be our year of increase, in whatever capacity that was. My specific prayer was that we would have a child. We would find a baby, someone would find us, and we would adopt a child in 2015. And so January 2015, we found a national adoption agency. Actually, Facebook found it. I think Facebook listens to you, because I think they were listening to kind of what we were talking about. And one of the Facebook ads was the National Adoption Agency. I won't say their name because someone's recording and they're not paying me, and I believe I'm going to utilize and do free advertising. I need to get something in return. There was a national adoption agency that popped up on Facebook. And so I said, okay. I looked at a local one, but when I did the research on that one, the way they advertise is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it. The way they advertise the adoption of black children bothered me. They advertised that black children were cheaper, which bothered my spirit, because we all know that our children are undervalued when they get here. The fact that you're undervaluing them when they're in the womb bothered me to my core, and I said, I'm not going to do that. She's since changed that advertisement, but that was the main reason why I didn't use this particular local agency over in Tampa. So at any rate, so we find the adoption agency, we go through that process to kind of get cleared. The adoption process is a very lengthy process. It requires a lot of patience, and if you know my husband and I, or you just know me, patience is not a virtue that I possess. So that really was God working on us. But in January, we, you know, filled out the information. We were accepted into the adoption agency's potential adoptive parents group. And then we just did what we were supposed to do, which is a lot of paperwork, a lot of background checks. We had to fill out, create our own little packet of why we would be good adoptive families to whatever birth mother made the decision to select us. And so that was a lengthy process, but we were focused. Our focus was, we knew that this was our year and this is the year we were going to adopt our son. And I remember Keith, maybe in March of that year, we were in the bathroom getting dressed, and he turned to me and he said, "Babe, our son is here." And so I'm looking around like, "Wait a minute, what are you talking about? I don't see a child in here. You know something I don't know?" And then he said, "No, he's either been conceived or he's been born." And I said, "Okay, I received that." We hadn't gotten a call yet, and we really hadn't finished our paperwork, but if that's what God has told you, I'm receiving that. So the year goes by. He celebrates a big birthday. We don't hear anything from the adoption agency. All our paperwork is in. And I remember family members and friends who kind of knew about our process asked us where we were in the process. And my consistent response and our consistent response was, God is faithful and our child is coming. I didn't know when. I was just sure that he was coming. There was no wavering in that. There was no questioning it. I was absolutely, you know, kind of a crazy faith thing. I knew he was coming. So my birthday comes, and I think my specific response was, our child will be here by my birthday, and my birthday's in September. So in September, we turned 40, had a really huge birthday party over in Tampa, a whole weekend. I think it was God's way of saying, I'm going to let you blow it out now, because for the next 18 years, you're not going to do anything. But that was September, I think it was September 10th, the weekend before September 10th, and I remember my mom calling me afterwards, concerned, because I said definitively, our child will be here by my birthday. And my mom knows it's aggravating me. I'm not sure it's aggravating y'all, it's aggravating me. My mother, she knows her child, and when I say things that definitive, I get disappointed easily. And so she wanted to ensure that I was not disappointed. And so she called and she said, "Have you heard anything from the adoption agency?" I said, "No, ma'am." She said, "Well, you know, how are you feeling?" I said, "I'm fine. It's not here. He's not here on my birthday, but we're gonna get a call before the end of this year." So she's like, "Okay." Fast forward to October 12th. I'm in my office on the phone, and on the phone with the client, and I have my cell phone here, and the phone is ringing, and it's a 727 number, which is St. Pete, and I don't answer numbers I don't know, so I didn't answer the phone, and it called like four times. I don't know who this is. I'm not answering the phone. And so finally sent me a text message, and it said, "Monica, this is Libby from such and such adoption agency. A baby boy was born in Atlanta yesterday, and the birth mother shows you your husband, but she's being discharged tomorrow." And so I was trying to wait for the client to stop talking, because at that juncture, I wasn't even paying attention to what they said. I hope it wasn't important, because I didn't do whatever it is they wanted me to do. But I ended the phone call, called her back, and she was super excited, and she said, "Have you talked to your husband?" I said, "No, not yet." She said, "Call him now. She's being discharged tomorrow, but she selected you and your husband." I said, "Okay." So I called Keith, and we both worked downtown Tampa at the time. And if anybody knows the difference between, I am super on 25, and Keith is probably 10, 15. So I call, "Okay, calm down. What would you like to do? Let's go. Okay, calm down." Literally, his voice was like, "What is wrong with this man? Why is he super excited like I am?" So he comes and picks me up. I go outside. My secretary and the other assistant in my office have we've been together for at least 9 years. So they are aware of my IVF. We're family, so they're kind of aware of everything that was going on. And I was crying in my office, and I walked out, and my secretary just immediately starts crying. And then a new attorney in the office, poor white dude, little white guy. So he was clearly brand new, clueless what was going on. And so then the other secretary comes in, she sees my assistant and I looking at each other and crying, and she walks in, the first thing she says, "We have a baby." And we're just standing this big heat, just crying, snot everywhere. And little guy comes up, "Is everything okay? Did somebody die?" She's like, "No, we have a baby." It was like, just super confused. So, you know, kind of gave him a general explanation. And so I rushed out the door. He came downstairs, drove to our house, called her, texting my sister on the phone, texting my girlfriends, texting my mom. And God gives you rams in a bush. Because I'm so on 25, I'm not thinking about the fact that we have to get to Atlanta Monday night. And flights are expensive, right? We don't have a place to stay. We may have to stay for an extended period of time. So I text my girlfriends, and one of my girlfriends in Wisconsin is a fan with me. Was like, I'm going to call Delta. I may be able to use some of my Delta miles. I'll figure it out. But I'm going to find a flight. You need a one-way or a ground trip. I said one-way because we got to stay in Atlanta. Another one of my girlfriends lives in Atlanta, and we call her house Oprah's house because it has 50 million rooms. You can stay as long as you need to go. I was like, oh, thank you, God. We have transportation and lodging covered. So then we're driving, and then driving home, and then we're like, oh, wait a minute. We don't have a baby seat or a stroller. So let's backtrack. So 2015, we also built our house. So we built a house, and the house that we designated as the nursery was still storage. So we had boxes, my clothes, just all over the place. So we have no place. When we bring this baby home, he's clearly gonna sleep on the floor because we have no crib, no clothes, and nothing. So we go to Babies R Us, are in there for about an hour, get the stroller, get the car seat, come back home. My sister's at my house at that juncture. She's gonna take us to the airport. And so again, if you know my husband and I, Keith and I love each other very much, but we don't always agree. We have two very different personalities. It takes us a minute to kind of come to one accord on something big, sometimes. The name was challenging. So we had like some options, but we couldn't agree on anything. Like, I liked Bishop, Eric, because my sister said, no, that sounds like, you know, Keith liked Bishop. Keith liked Bishop. I was okay on Bishop. Erica said it reminded her of Tupac on Jews. I like Deacon, and Keith didn't like Deacon. Man, it sounded like an old man with white and black shoes. So my family liked Deacon either, so what would Keith say? Will you please stop telling your family our name options? I was like, okay, my bad. So we're in the living room, packing up, getting ready to go, and my sister reminds him, we don't have a name. And so I said, oh, what about Miles? Yeah, I like that. Just like that. I was like, oh, okay, let me try this again. All right, we're going for a middle name. Anthony is a family name for Keith. And so it was Miles Anthony. And then my father passed, and I really wanted some part of my dad in the midst of that name. So my maiden name is Williams. So Miles' name is Miles William Anthony. So that was done within 5 minutes before we left the house. So on the way to the airport, we're on the phone with the attorney says, I need you to call the birth mother because she wants to talk to you before you all get to Atlanta. I was not anticipating this. My mindset was, she selected us. Yes, we can go to Atlanta, get the baby, stay for however long we need, and we can come back. I'm a lawyer, so I know that's not true, but in my mind, that's what I'm thinking, just to kind of make it easy, because I recognize that at any point in time, she can change her mind. So on the way to the airport, we call his birth mother, and I can tell in her voice that she's cautious, and she still has some misgivings, because she just made the decision, and I can tell that she may be on the verge of changing her mind. And so Keith is talking to her, and then I asked to speak with her. And I share with her, I said, you know, she said she felt guilty because she had a nine-year-old. She's 12 now, probably 12 now. She had a nine-year-old daughter. And she expressed to me how guilty she felt about making the decision to place him up for adoption because she felt like she was giving up on him. And I immediately started crying, and I told her, I said, you know, I just want to tell you what a blessing you are to our family. You know, whatever your decision is, please understand that I'm thankful, our family is thankful, and the village that you're bringing him into is extremely thankful for this decision. And I can't imagine what you're feeling right now, but I'm appreciative. I just wanted to express to her how appreciative I was that she was making that decision, because I can't imagine that. And I guess my husband, Keith, realized that he could sense something in me and my spirit that was unsettling. And again, a ram in the bush. He says to me, he says, babe, if we get to Atlanta and walk into this hospital room and his birth mother makes the decision that she's going to keep and raise her child, know that the only reason God sent us up here was to minister to this young lady and let me remind her that she has somebody in Tampa that loves her and is here for her. Because what the adoption agency had told us is that her family wasn't involved. And so his Keith's message to me was, if that's the only reason we go, then that's what we're supposed to do. And so that gave me peace. In the back of my mind, I'm still thinking, please, Lord, don't let me get over to Atlanta and then she changed her mind. But I also recognized that if that was what she chose to do, that ultimately was her decision. So we get to Atlanta in the evening. We're going through Atlanta's airport with an empty stroller and an empty car seat. And I'm sure the people in Atlanta were looking at me like I'd lost my mind. Well, both of us like we lost our mind because we had luggage where the baby was supposed to be. So we're pushing the baby, pushing the car seat and the stroller through Atlanta's airport, get to the hospital in Atlanta, walk in, and he was the smallest baby I had ever seen. He was four pounds, 13 ounces. Smallest baby I'd ever seen. Just tiny. And I remember looking at him and saying, oh my gosh. And his birth mother said, straight Atlanta, just draw and everything. She said, oh, don't worry, just little, you can pick him up. I was like, okay. So I scooped him up. Cute as a button, but just tiny. Just really, a really small baby. And we talked to her for a minute. I asked her how she was feeling, and she said, fine. You could kind of tell she was still cautious. And before we walked in, the lawyer was there, and she said she hadn't chosen what state law to use. So for that purpose, we have a lawyer in the house, but besides myself. So when you do interstate adoptions, the birth mother or birth parents have the ability to choose which law they want to select. If you choose Florida law, the choices are where the birth mother is and where the adoptive parents live. So those are the two laws. So Keith and I lived in Florida. He was born and the birth mother lives in Georgia. So she could choose Georgia or Florida law. And Florida law, under Florida law, unless it has changed, and I don't do family law. Do you do family law? Okay. So the last time I checked, and this is when I took the bar 20 years ago, and I don't think it's changed, but the last time I checked, in Florida, if the baby is under 3 months old and the parents do a termination of parental rights, it's automatic as soon as they sign the paperwork and inside. Conversely, in Georgia, there's a 10-day revocation period. So she could sign the papers, they could be filed, and she had 10 days to change her mind. So when we got there on Monday night, she had not yet selected what law she wanted to choose. And so, you know, from a legal perspective, I'm like, okay, this is kind of heavy. All right, okay. And I'm also thinking, y'all didn't work all this out before we flew all the way to Atlanta. But a very sweet young lady, 27 years old. This was a bad situation. It wasn't that she wasn't able to be a parent. It was a bad situation for her. And so that was very clear that she was focused, very clear, she was a sharp young lady. This was just a situation that she got herself into and just wasn't the right time. But you could still tell that she was having a little cautious and still on the fence about whether that was something she really wanted to do. So we stayed for maybe 30 minutes. We stayed after 30 minutes to an hour. It was after visiting hours. So we had to break out of the hospital, almost got arrested. Bring out of the hospital, and then we get to my girlfriend's house. Wake up the next morning. I did ask his birth mother what she wanted to eat. The food was good, and she said, no, it's real nasty. So I told her, I bring her, said, what do you want? She said, grits, eggs. I said, I got you. Grits, eggs, bacon, whatever you want, I'll bring it to you the next day. So get to the hospital the next morning, early the next morning, because she's being discharged on Tuesday. Walk in, and the lawyer tells us that she selected Florida law, which means that she signed the paperwork. It's the right to terminate it. One thing off. And the funny thing is, because we're talking about faith, I had faith in God's, but God told me that he was going to do this the entire time. I didn't start doubting until we got the phone call from the adoption agency. So again, this is a story about adoption, but it's a story about unwavering faith. And when you have unwavering faith, what the end result is, and when you have unwavering faith and you're obedient to what he's telling you to do, when you get close to what he's promised you, he's going to absolutely, and I'm not a preacher, I'm not here to preach to anybody, but this is our story. When you get close to what he said he's going to give you, the enemy's going to absolutely come in and provide you some doubt. So I had several pieces of doubt. On the way to the airport, we get to the hospital, I'm still questioning him. And then he's like, girl, they're not telling you that I got you. So she selected Florida law. She's in there eating her breakfast. She's filling out paperwork. And one of the pieces of paperwork she's filling out is the birth certificate. Then she has to fill out the birth certificate for the hospital, and then during the adoption process, it's changed. So Keith Amaya's name is now on the birth certificate. But at the time, she's filling out the birth certificate for the discharge. And I noticed her writing her name. And I looked at her middle name and almost lost it. Her middle name is Monica. So I held myself together and I looked at her and she said, "That's why I chose you." I was like, "Whoo, okay, all right." And so she's filling out the name, and then she asked Keith and I, she said, "Well, have you all selected a name?" And we said, "Yes, Miles Wayne Anthony." And she starts to smile. And so we thought it was kind of peculiar. Keith was like, is one of those names strike a chord with you? And she said, "Yes, Anthony." Well, she asked, she said, "Why did you all select Anthony?" And he said, "That's a family name for me." And she said, And Keith was like, "Okay, well, what does that mean?" And she said, "That's my dad and my brother's name." Keep in mind, we've never met this young lady. The first time we met her was the night before. So her middle name is Monica, which is my first name. Anthony is a family name. It's her dad and her brother's name. So I was like, "Laura, you wouldn't show out business. You wouldn't show out business." So we are discharged. Miles goes. We all go out the hospital together. She goes her way with the attorney. Keith and I go our way with Miles. She didn't flinch. She didn't shed a tear, at least not in front of us. She didn't do anything. It was as if she made that decision. That was her decision. That was it. And so we get into the car, lock them in. I look down and immediately begin to weep. Not only because I'm overwhelmed by the blessing and the gift, but because I have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, I was looking at him like, "I have no idea how to feed you." We almost left the hospital without any clothes because my girlfriend had to run to Target and get clothes because we didn't have any clothes to take him out to the hospital in. All he had was like a little t-shirt with underwear on that they give you in the hospital. And so I remember looking down, just crying and just saying, thank you God for this. And you know, this is a gift and we will absolutely raise him to honor you, to respect you, to, you know, just anything and everything that we can do to remind him of how, what a blessing he is and what a blessing you are is what our goal is going to be. And that's what we plan to do. But I remember calling my mom, and my mom was like, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yes, I don't know what to do." She said, "None of us do. We brought you home. Y'all is a work in progress." So I was like, "Oh gosh." And so the next day, we took her out to lunch. And crazy me, even though she signed the paperwork, said that she chose Florida law, when we picked her up, and I don't know if I told my husband this, I had this thought that she was going to take the baby and run. I'm telling you, the enemy is, listen, when you, he tried the trick, you know what I mean? Keith was like, "What?" I told him later, like, "What?" I said, "I'm just telling you, I thought that she was going to snatch him and run. How far was she going to get? She just had a baby." I didn't say it made sense, I'm just telling you how I felt and what my thought process was. But we were sitting down for lunch, and I really felt more connected to her because she expressed and shared with her all her dreams for herself and her daughter, very actively engaged and involved in her daughter's life, doesn't have a car but has ensured that she gets off her job and scheduled her job in enough time to get to her daughter's school, to be there when her daughter gets out of school, to get on the bus to go home. So she's committed. And what she told us was, she said, "I selected you all not just because Monica is your middle name or because, you know, there was a connection, but because I knew, I could tell from the paperwork that you all submitted that this is the kind of family I wanted my child to be raised in. And I knew that I could not raise a young black man in Atlanta by myself." That I knew. And so we're talking, and she's talking more about her daughter, and then she's talking about cell phones, and her daughter's 9 and wants a cell phone, and she thinks that's ridiculous, and that no 9-year-old needs a cell phone. And then she said that she was considering getting her one of those, you know, disposable ones for her birthday. And so Keith says, "Well, when's your birthday? When's your birthday?" And she says, "February 4th. And me and Keith started laughing because that's his birthday. So I said, "Okay, God, you're right. I'm sorry. I should doubt. You're correct. This is all you." And so we leave lunch, take her to, we asked her where she wanted to go. We took her to her daughter's school. She wanted to be dropped at her daughter's school. She gets out the front seat, opens the back car door where Miles is sitting, kisses Miles on the head, closes the door, and walks away. Doesn't shed a tear, doesn't say, doesn't do anything. And I'm there and carried a child. I've told the story 15 times, and I cry every exact same moment every time. I never carried a child in my womb, but I could not imagine what it's like to carry a baby for 10 months and then make a decision that I know I can't do this and say that I'm trusting you with this gift. I'm trusting you, people that I've never met before. I have no idea who you are. I know what you're capable of. And I'm trusting you to say, I trust you with this gift. I trust you with this gift. I believe that you'll do right by this gift. And you walk me off. And she, the only thing that she asked of us was two things. She said, tell him about me and send me pictures. And for the first year of Miles' life, I sent her pictures every month. Every month, so she could see that how he matured and grown. And now I send it every birthday and on Christmas and on holidays, but that first year I send it every month. That was the easy part. The hard part, which gets into the how I wrote the book, is how I was going to tell our son that he was adopted. And I don't care about what any adopted parent tells you, if you know someone who has adopted a child, that is the hardest conversation to try to have. Because you not only have to explain, you know, conceptually how they came into this world when they see their parents, when they see their friends' parents are having babies, but why it is that this person that carried someone in their womb for 9 to 10 months or whatever made a decision that they didn't want them, which is not true, but that's from a child's perspective, that's their mindset. And so mine was 3 and a half, and so the how I wrote the book is, and the kind of why and the how I wrote the book, is based on that. How are we going to share with our son that he was adopted? Because I made a promise, we made a promise his birth mother, we wanted to share that information with him. And I knew that I was supposed to write a book. And so that was clear because God told me I was supposed to write the book when we got the first phone call, or when we were kind of going through the process that I was supposed to write a book. I thought it was about a book about my journey that I just shared with you all. But obviously it's too difficult to say. So it absolutely is too difficult to write because it's much deeper than what I'm sharing with you all. The latter part of last year, God said, no, I want you to write a children's book. And I'm a lawyer, so lawyers don't write flowery. It's pretty black and white. It's facts. Law, and that's it. All of the extra creative writing is not something that we have. That's not something that we do. So when he said, well, God, I want you, Monica, I want you to write a children's book, I was like, well, God, I don't know how to do that. He said, I didn't ask you. Again, I did not ask you that. I'm just telling you what to do. And so it's okay, no problems. And for adoptive parents, there are several books out there that talk about the concept of adoption. You have adoption books that have white families, black children, white families, white children, white families, multi-ethnic children, animals, adopting different types of animals. But there's not a single book out there, at least when I started writing this one, that has a black family that has adopted a black child, more specifically a black boy. And I looked. Tony Dungy now has one, but his came after mine. But there were no books out there that talked about adoption in a age-appropriate way to assist adoptive parents in sharing the adoption story with their children. And God's promise does not have the word adoption in it at one time, but the concept is there. And so God said, you know, Monica, write this book. I said, okay, not a problem. And so Watch Night Service 2018, again, I suggest that you all go to Watch Night Service. Apparently God speaks to his children very clearly during Watch Night Service. But we went to Watch Night Service, and I was returning to Keith and said, Keith, because I'd been putting it off. It was there, and the only thing that kept coming to my mind was, Mommy, was I born in your heart? Did I grow in your belly? Mommy, did I grow in your belly? Were the only words that kind of came to my mind. I didn't have anything after that. So that phrase kept coming to me, but I didn't have anything after that. And so we go to Watch Night Service, and I turned to Keith, and I said, I'm going to write this book this year. And he's like, all right, okay. I was like, I don't know how to do it, but we're going to write it. Fast forward. So January, one of my sorority sisters has a, sorority sister and late sister has a book talk in Tampa. Her name is Casey Curry. I strongly advise. She writes adult fiction, phenomenal. So she has two books out, look at them. But I've never been to a book talk before, so after Lynn's meeting, I said, well, let me go to this book talk. And I'm sitting in the book talk, and she's kind of talking about her process, how she wrote her second novel, which is Pillar of Fire. How she wrote the second novel, which is a sequel to the first book, and in the midst of that, I raised my hand. I had no intention when I went there to ask any questions, but I raised my hand and I said, I'm thinking about writing. And now when you open your, when you raise your hand, and I'm a person, if you raise your hand and you say something out in public, you kind of have to do, for me, you kind of have to do what you say you're going to do. So I was like, okay, I'm raising my hand. You know, the other side is like, Monica, what are you doing? All you have is, was I born in your belly? And I said, I asked her, I said, I'm thinking about writing a children's book. Oops. Do you have any advice for me? And she said, oh, yeah. And so she gives me four things. She said, it has to be authentic. You have to write about what you know. Keep it to 16 to 30 pages. The illustrations and the manuscript have to mesh. There has to be a marriage between the two of them. And then figure out who your target market is. Those are the four things. As I'm sitting in that book talk, the first, if you have God's promise, the first five pages of God's promise I wrote in that book talk in January. For the first five pages. If I had my phone, I'd read it to you, and it's verbatim what's in there. So I was like, okay. So I had that. I was like, okay. All right. That sounds good. I had to stop, though, because I didn't know where else to go. The other thing she said is you're going to write a book, whether it's children or whatever type of book, is that you have to commit and be disciplined about writing at least an hour a day. So a children's book, you don't need to write an hour a day. You can think about it an hour a day or just kind of jot down notes for an hour, which I did do. But you don't necessarily need to do it for an hour a day. But I thought about it. But I had those first five lines. If you have the book, I think the first question Isaac asked is, Mommy, did I grow in your belly? And then the whole conversation between the mom and the dad. And then she finally says, no, you grew in my heart. From that first sentence to you grew in my heart was all in my heart. So fast forward a couple of weeks, I go to the hair salon. And y'all know y'all go to the hair salon, it takes a long time to get in there, so you know how to do some work. So God said, take your laptop. I said, okay, no problem. So the stuff that I had on my phone, I'd written out and put it on my jump drive. I take my jump drive and my laptop to the hairdresser, sitting under the salon, sitting under the hair dryer, wrote the rest of the book in 2 hours. So with someone said, well, how long did it take the book to write the book, Monica? 3 hours. 3 years conceptually, but actually physically writing it, it took me 3 hours to write it. So the little boy's name in the book is Isaac. It was Miles initially. And so, you know, as much as I post my child's images and likeness on social media, we don't want him to be known as, you know, him being associated with this book. We want him to be Miles. So we changed the name of the book. Keith and I said, we don't want the name of the little boy's the name of the little boy in the book to be Miles. We want it to be something else. And so I did like most parents do when you're kind of trying to find a name for a child. I went through the baby books. I'm Googling names and meanings of children's names. And then Isaac popped into my head. And I said, Isaac. So I talked to my mom. I said, talk to my mom and my sister. I said, what do y'all think about Isaac? And I was like, hmm. And Erica said, well, what sparked that? I said, Abraham and Sarah. They were old parents. Me and Keith are old parents. And Isaac was God's promise to them, so that's why we named him Isaac, and that's why the name of the book is God's Promise. So that's the process by which I wrote the book. And one of the goals I had was, after the manuscript was finished, the manuscript was done, I had my little team of trusty people, my husband, my sister, my mom, kind of be my editors. So if you see any misspellings, it's not me. I have a whole tribe of people. Or just some, not, you know, subject verb disagreement is not me. I have people that read it. But the other thing my goal was when I wrote this book, and this is the first of the series, the second book's already written, and the illustrator has it, yeah. So Isaac, you'll see Isaac again, and that will be released towards the end of the year. But one of my goals was to ensure that as a black woman, that I wanted to use a black female illustrator. So the young lady that illustrated the book, her name is Jasmine Mills, and she's phenomenal. If you ever decide to write a children's book, I highly recommend her. I go for that type of information. She's really, really good. She's a sharp sister. Jasmine Mills, I found a black editor and a black layout person, black female layout person. So that was my goal. And so I asked God, if I'm doing this, I want to have black women involved in this. And all along the process, it was all black women. And so now that I've written the book and it's out there and we're selling copies, and I'm super excited, because when you're sharing this story, you're sharing a vulnerable part of yourself, and so you're opening yourself up to criticism, which is fine, because it's my story. You either don't like it or you don't. I don't care. It's my story, or our story. That's true. I do care. But it is, I'm lying. I do care, because this really is a book from my spirit, and it is our story, so it's personal. But the other reason I wrote is because I want to open up the dialogue and conversation about two things. And I was on the radio the other day. This is one of the questions that Elizabeth asked me. I want to open up the conversation because I wanted us to start talking about infertility for African American women. At 35, I was thinking, oh yeah, you know, I can. Women are having children late. Janet Jackson had a baby at 50, or whatever old she was. Janet Jackson also is a millionaire and can go do whatever she needs to do to have it. But when you're in the midst of living your life, you don't really have an appreciation for that. Now, I say that, but some people don't want children, and that's fine. You have some. I have two girlfriends right now who are over 40 who made a conscious decision they're going to have babies by themselves. One is due in October, one is due in December. I have another one that had just had a baby 10 years ago by herself because she said she wanted it. And so it was twofold. One, to have this conversation about infertility in our community, because as I shared on the radio the other day, for some reason in our culture, we believe that black women can have children like rabbits. And the baby's pregnant, but I'm just gonna be honest. We have this belief because from a historical perspective, historically, black women had children, raised other people's children, had lots of children, and we didn't talk about those women that weren't able or who were considered barren. I'm not necessarily considered, I don't think I'm barren, it just didn't work for me. But that's a conversation that we need to have. And I think I applaud Michelle Obama, I applaud Gabrielle Union, I applaud those women who are open about it, because I think that it starts a conversation. That's the first piece. The second piece is, I want us to start having more conversations about adoption in our community, whether it's foster to adopt, whether it's private adoption. I think I shared this statistic with Elizabeth. In 2017, for the last 5 years, the number of children that are eligible for adoption has increased. In 2017, almost 500,000 children were available or up for adoption or in the foster care system. A good percentage of those children look like us. And so if you talk about, if there's 500,000 children that are eligible for adoption, of those, let's say there's a 50-50 split, 50% are white, 50% are black. Those 50% of white children who are up for adoption are adopted much more quickly. And so there is a desire for white children, and so they're more expensive. That's not my phrase, that's the phrase in the industry. Black children, however, particularly black boys, which is one of the reasons why we made it a conscious decision that if we're going to adopt, we're going to adopt a little black boy. Aside from the fact that my husband has three girls already, I think he was estrogen overload and he wanted a boy. But the other part was we wanted to adopt a young black boy because we know that in the adoption space, black boys are hard to adopt. And the older they get, the more challenging it is to adopt them. And so there are various different ways that you can adopt. There's foster to adopt, if you know a family friend that's trying to adopt. There's plenty of ways that you can do it. Again, it's not an inexpensive proposition, but it's doable. And so for some reason in our community, that we don't have that conversation. And it's not an open conversation, which is what I have been open, and Keith and I are open about our journey, because I don't want our son to feel like he is any less than my nephew or my nieces. He is our son. I mean, and I've grown him in my womb, but he absolutely grew in the depths of my soul and my spirit. And this is Grandma Marsha, that's Auntie Renee. He has a village, just like my brother's kids have a village. There's no difference, and when you feed them, they start looking like you anyway, because they look like him. And so, you know, one of the things I've said is that I tell my friends who want to be mothers, that sometimes mothering is not always about nature, it's about nurture. So you can be a mother to someone you mentor. You can be a mother to a young lady that you see that you know is going through something. You just give a hug or a motherly word of advice to. But this concept of adoption, this word adoption, I want us in our community to start talking about it. There are a lot of people that want to have that conversation but don't know who to talk to. I can't say I'm an advocate for it, or maybe I am, but I just want that conversation to be something that's talked about out in the open versus behind the scenes and in secret. I have one more thing to say, but I can't remember what it was now, but it'll come back. Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Was there a decision to start talking about early as possible, if it's something that parents should wait for or wait
for us, I think the decision was we want to get that word in his vocabulary sooner versus later. Because kids can be mean, and if kids understand what adoption means, you know, I don't want someone saying, ah, that's why you're adopted. Because, I mean, I'll be frank, when we were growing up, there's three of us. We told my brother he was adopted all the time. As a patrol, you know, it's trying to be mean, not realizing that there's nothing wrong, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But we wanted that. Y'all know y'all did that. That's why you adopt, you know, that's y'all know y'all did. Well, maybe it's just the bad Williams children did it. So I think it depends on the parents, on the family structure, but for us, I wanted to get the word in his space sooner versus later. In addition, this is a good book to assist biological children in understanding the concept of adoption. So my brother has three. The oldest is 13. She gets it. He's a 6 and a 5-year-old who may or may not understand it. As far as they're concerned, Miles is their cousin. How he got here is irrelevant. Now, the middle one, who we call Erica Jr., she's feisty. She said, Auntie Monica, but you were pregnant. You're right, Avery, I wasn't. And so I had to explain to her kind of how this came about. She said, oh, okay, he grew in your heart? I was like, yeah, he's okay. And she walked, she left. It was whatever for her. I think children make it something when we make it something. And so to answer your question, it depends on the family. My suggestion would be the earlier the better, and not just for children that you adopt, but it's to anybody, any child. Yes, ma'am.
And a baby shower for a friend who's adopted me as a single woman. I don't think my mother or my grandparents' generation, they had informal adoptions.
Correct.
But the celebration of going to her baby shower for her to adopt, it was so much excitement. Mm-hmm. I feel like the more people talk about, and she never tried. She's single, not married. I've also been in this industry, so I've been that attorney to possible birth mothers and savers. This is where we're headed. This is why you need to make a decision. I've seen this here. I've seen the fact that you can explain it to the birth parents' family. Sometimes the family doesn't know.
Correct.
Why? But sometimes even the best to the family members is not necessarily the best to the child.
Correct.
That's a hard conversation.
Yeah.
To say,
Yeah, I actually have a sorority sister who was a surrogate for another sorority sister, which I thought was a beautiful, beautiful thing. They both were fam, beautiful thing. And to your point, we've had always an informal adoption. You have a niece that may have a baby and no one will even talk about it, and grandma adopts and raises. So we've done it. But to your point, it was never celebrated the way it probably should have been. Because I think I have several friends who have found out later, or I've heard of people who have found out later that they were adopted, and it destroys them. So my godparents, both of their children are adopted. And I think my godbrother, I don't know this for a fact, but my belief is that my godbrother found out from someone else that he was adopted, and that he still loves his parents and they are still his parents, but there's always that question in the back of his mind, why? You know, what was it about me that made my mom, my birth mother make the decision that I'm going to have someone else to do this? And so, to your point, however you create your family, it's your family. That's your story. Celebrate it. Be excited. I want my, y'all, he's asleep now probably, but just bouncing around. He's not asleep? Oh, he's okay. Bouncing around here, just super excited. He is my energetic self with Keith's comedic nature. So he's the best of both. He looked like him, so maybe there's something he's not telling me. One of those boys trips in Atlanta. I'm just joking. But to your point, I think it is something that needs to be celebrated. Because I remember when I shared with older women that we'd adopted, and we were very open about it. She pulled me to the side and she said, and I was like, okay, that's really good. And in the back of my mind, I was like, why are you whispering about that? Why? But I think to your point, it's not something that we, not being able to conceive or not conceiving or not having children, for some reason for women, it seems as a negative. It's a tag on you if you're single, no children, single, unmarried, no children, okay? A man is single, unmarried, no children. It's not man bashing, just gonna be honest. Single, unmarried, no children. She's all right. There's something wrong with us if we're single, unmarried, no children. You know what I mean? So I applaud those single women who are saying, I'm going to do this by myself. God bless them, because it's hard with two. It's hard with two, but you know, I'm sure that they're absolutely on board and can do it. That's awesome. Does anybody else have any questions? Yes, ma'am. God bless you. And so when you go through the adoption process, when the adoption is final, I did forget about that. They bring you in, the judge brings the family in, and he just kind of lets you talk. And they do make you raise your hand, and there's an oath that you take where you're promising. I don't remember exactly what it says, but I remember I was bawling. We have pictures and video of it. But essentially, it's you're promising to love this child. And he confirmed that this child is yours, period. No questions asked, nothing to it. This child is yours. And so, so yes, to your point, when you're there in that space, in that moment, it is a very moving space. By that time, Miles had been with us we adopted Miles at 2 days old. So he knows no one but his daddy and I. And that, you know, that's a blessing. Knows nobody but grandma. You know, the day that he does ask me more details about his birth mother, we'll cross that hurdle when we get to it. But I don't have any qualms about, what's wrong, Pete? I don't have any qualms about sharing that information as much as I know with him. I don't know very much about his birth father, but I do know something about his birth mother. But the book is, how old is he? Yeah, perfect. Because Miles is 3 and a half. Perfect. Perfect. The word adoption is not used at all, but the concept is contained in the book. The second book, the word adoption is used, but the first one is not.
No. Anybody else have any questions? Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And to your point, I think a part of it also is on us to advocate for ourselves. Because I remember when I got that first diagnosis, where the doctor told me at 35 that if I wanted children, I have to have 1 or 2 years to do it. Otherwise, there's going to be all these issues. I went to my second gynecologist, and she rolled her eyes, and she said, "You don't know what he's talking about." But I went to a white man because that's who my insurance covered. My gynecologist now is a black woman. And so she had the conversation with me. She said, you are 38. You need to start thinking about fertility, what you want to do, if you want to freeze your eggs. I know you're not married yet. You know you're married again yet. You can do it by yourself. So she, to your point, she had that conversation with me. And I think a part of it is that we have to advocate for ourselves and ask what our options are. I mean, is adoption expensive? Yeah, but there are opportunities out there for you to get a loan or for you to get a grant to assist you. There was a reimbursement for a portion of the adoption process. So there are options out there. I was not even aware that my employer had it, but as soon as she found out, she was like, "Oh yeah, we have some reimbursement. We'll give you some of that money back." I was like, "That? Not a problem. Thank you." So part of it is just asking questions and advocating for yourself. But thank you for that. Anybody else? Yes. Yes, sir. One of my parents adopted, and they didn't know what if
I could. My mom adopted.
Okay. And she still doesn't know.
She knows now.
Oh, she knows now. Okay.
Yeah. Me and my
auntie,
I found
out
with a sister.
Oh.
But I found out. I was adopted.
Oh.
So it was like, now that you're older,
yeah.
I know
my friends, so the only friend I have a friend that's my age, and I did ask her when I wrote this, because I have two or three friends who are adopted, and one of my friends over in Tampa who is adopted. I asked her before I wrote this book, how did your parents tell you? And her comment was, she's always known. It was never a thing, she's always known. So I don't have an answer to that question. I do know, based on the one example I have with my godbrother, that when you find out not from your parents, it does have an impact on you, because you have lots of questions that you probably want to get answered, but your parents don't have the answer, and you may or may not have contact or may not have information with your birth parents. And sometimes sometimes adoptions are closed. So we have an open adoption. So if I needed to get his mother's information, so there's an open adoption and a closed adoption. We have an open adoption, which means that if I needed to get information from his birth mother or birth father, I could do that. And I know her name. I know that she's in Atlanta still, presumably. I have a phone number. I communicate with her, like I said, on holidays. Closed adoption means that there is no communication. And so it's done. And if the child wants to find their birth mother after the fact, or birth parent after the fact, it's a little bit more difficult because those files or whatever are sealed. So I don't have an answer to that question. I wish I did, but I don't have an answer. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
Adoption in and of itself is not a shameful thing. But if we as a community work around borders, helping us know, they don't say that, whatever, if we're saying we're assigned.
It shouldn't have. And so one of the things that I have said to is, you know, my, whatever your, whatever position, whatever faith you are, and I'm a Christian, that's my faith. Adoption is a ministry, and that's the way I view it. I think if you're a birth parent, it takes a special type of person. It's not for everybody. It takes a special type of person to make a conscious decision and say, but I cannot do this. I know I can't do this, and I'm praying and asking God to send me the right person or right family that's going to raise this child that I've given, that grown in my womb. I'm giving it to you as a gift. As an adoptive parent, as adoptive parents, or adoptive parent, adoptive family, adoptive village, that's a ministry as well, because you are saying, yes, we received this gift, and we are saying, yes, we're going to raise this child to the best of our ability. And we recognize any gift that you treasure, you buy, you know, my car, that really big television, whatever it is that you value, you treat it a certain way. And I know there's some backlash about interracial adoption. That's probably subconsciously one of the other reasons why I'm so pushing so hard for us to have this conversation within our community. Is because when I see white families with black children, I've grown to be okay with it. But then when I see situations where those two women drove those babies off that cliff, that bothers me, because I know that those were children whose lives were lost for no other reason than they were in the system too long. I mean, you have children that are in the system from 2 until they're 18, and they're in there, and they really want to be adopted. They really want someone to hug and love and tell them that they are important and special. So somebody else had a hand up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I believe Facebook listens to your conversations. I'm just being honest. So I'm on Facebook, and I see an ad on the side for adoptions. There's a national adoption agency. I'll tell you offline what the name of it is, because they're not paying me to say publicly who it is. But it was a national adoption agency, and the trick with them, or the challenge with them, is because they're national, your child can come from anywhere across the country. And you have to be willing to go where the birth mother or child is and be willing to stay for however long that you need to stay. But before we did that, there was a local adoption agency in Tampa that I did look at. It's pretty popular in Tampa. But at the time, the way she was advertising, and I hate to use that phrase, but for all intents, that's what it was. The differences in cost between white children, biracial children, Hispanic children, and black children, I didn't like. She said black children were cheaper on her advertising. So, as I explained before, you know, our children are already devalued when they get here. The fact that if I want a newborn baby and you're devaluing this child before they even take breath on their own is problematic for me. Now, the fact is, because there are more, I was a business major, supply demand, I hate to use that, but that's what it is. There are more black children, because there are more black children, they're gonna be a little less, the process is going to be a little less expensive, because it doesn't take as much time and energy to find them. Does that make sense? So we found it on Facebook. It just so happened, it just worked out. Now, I did my due diligence to kind of look at reviews and find out what this adoption agency really was about. Looked at kind of, you know, what the feedback was from people who had gone through the process, because I heard horror stories of people aligning themselves with adoption agencies, and then they spend all this money, and they are giving money to the birth mother, and the birth mother either changes their mind or skips out on time or whatever it is, and then there's no refund policy, you know what I mean? So ours was on, we found ours online. And we referred them a couple times to some people, and they've been successful. So all the people that we referred to them have had successful adoptions, and I think adopted newborn babies. One was a boy, and the other was a girl. So, and in the sharing the story, you know, as a positive note, sharing my story. I was sharing with Keith. One of my girlfriends from high school emailed me yesterday. And when I posted, when we first got Miles, and I posted that lengthy Facebook post with his baby picture, she sent me an inbox message and I talked to her on the phone saying how happy she was and expressed to me that her and her husband were struggling for years to have children. And then she thought about adoption, but just wasn't sure how it would work out from a financial perspective. She called me yesterday and told me that her and her husband were adopting two boys down in West Palm. The situation is sad. There's a young lady whose boyfriend, she has five kids. Her boyfriend killed her 22-month-old last year. And so the family members have the other children, and she selected the birth mother because she's probably going to jail. They selected the 17-month-old who's currently in the foster care system and a brand new baby that was just born yesterday. So the story is sad, but I'm happy that these two babies are able to be in a really loving and welcoming environment. And so she is my perfect example of, you know, being faithful. And I told her, my scripture was, it's hanging on my desk, Philippians 4:6. If you pray for it, you can't pray and worry. You let your petitions be known to God and let him do the rest. I'm severely paraphrasing that scripture, but a real bad paraphrase. But essentially, if you're praying, you let your petitions known with thanksgiving, he's gonna give it to you. And so I told her that's what I was resting on the entire time we were going through our adoption process with Miles. And she texted me, she inboxed me, she said, I rested on that scripture the entire time. And I just wanted to let you know that you found out yesterday. I'm here right now looking at our son, and we're working with Department of Children and Families to get the 17-month-old. So it's doable. I have another girlfriend who did foster to adopt, and she finalized her and her husband finalized foster to adopt. Was he before or after Miles? He was after. So she was her and her husband foster for a while, and then there was a little boy who 15 months old, fostered, fell in love. I'm not sure what happened, what was going on with his family, but they were able to foster to adopt, and they finalized theirs maybe 6 months after we got Miles. And so they are bosom buddies. It's kind of like they're kindred spirits, and they know that they have stories, but they get together, and they are bosom buddies for sure. Any other questions, comments? Yes, sir. That in this space, Marcel, we appreciate that. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. I was sincerely, but you have another comment?
I was just gonna say, because I'm so behind to the 40s, and 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 the
It's us too.
It's
us too.
And I'm like shocked. I'm like, but this is their truth.
Yeah.
Misunderstandings, and I'm shocked these are highly educated black women who have just crazy something that we can have kids up to like.
Well, the other thing is, and I shared this at the beginning, that when we went through our two cycles of IVF, the second time when I was angry and upset and despondent and depressed, I remember asking God, is this payback for something that I did? Which is not how God works, but that's what I was thinking. Is this payback for something that I've done? And I remember my mom, who had no appreciation for the IVF process at all, because she had three, and she didn't have to go through any of this. It was difficult to have that conversation with her because she didn't understand what my space was and kind of understand how to communicate with me about it. And I gathered in that communication that she wasn't clear. She's clear now and she has more of an appreciation for it, but at the time, you know, because before Keith and I got married, we're calling my mom, and the doctor told me, you know, you have 2 to 3, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 years. I said, well, I'm going to find somebody to have a baby. My mom was like, well, don't do that. I was like, well, it's going to be, you know, donor 5, 5, 6, 7, 3, because I wanted a child, you know what I mean? Because like, I knew that's what I wanted, and I wasn't concerned about what, I think at the older generation, and sometimes our generation as well, is more concerned about what everybody else is going to think about how we control our desire and our road to parenthood. If you want to be a mama, excuse my language, baby, damn it, be a mama. Figure out how you're going to do that thing that's going to work best financially for you. But when people have, I've had people say, this is a true story, my sister was pissed, she was going to fly to Baltimore when I text her this. I'm having lunch, dinner, with a really, really good friend and his wife. And my friend was very good, we adopted Miles, kind of having that conversation. I've never met his wife before. And so we're just kind of a get to know you dinner. And so I'm explaining to them our kind of, you know, the adoption process, kind of mentioned him that I was interested in writing a book. And then she asked me what kind of, you know, what was the process like and, you know, the IVF process and why. She's kind of, and I'm open. So I'm going to share because I don't know what you're going through. I'm not digging. But if I share with you, maybe something I say will touch you and bless you. So after I finished my story and I tell her I had 2 failed IVF attempts and explain kind of what that process is like, she says, and I don't think she meant it, I don't know how she meant it, but I can tell you how I received it. But what she said was, oh, well, we won't have this problem. Yeah, we won't have this problem. Correct. Now, they have a child now. I don't know what that process looked like. I pray that she didn't have to go through what I went through. But it's that level of insensitivity, and it's because we don't talk about it. I think that if we had more conversations about it, people would realize, perhaps, that certain things that you say are going to be somewhat insensitive. I have an aunt that would ask, so when are y'all having kids? Or are you getting married? Or when I got divorced, why are you getting divorced? I mean, just you know, because I want to, I don't know, and eventually. You know, those are my answers, but that's me. But I know I have other single cousins and family members, and I'm sure that they get that, and that's hurtful. I don't think that people are saying it to be mean-spirited. It's really kind of trying to have an honest conversation, but some things you just have to kind of tiptoe around or figure out a different way to say it. But she absolutely, we won't have those problems. And I had someone else that said something to the effect of, I don't remember how they phrased Miles being adopted. No, that was it, because I said we had to go to do the adoption route, and in the midst of doing the IVF and adoption, she said, oh, we won't have those problems. And so I remember my sister was like, problems? Is she trying to say my nephew's a problem? I was like, I don't think she's saying that. That's not how I received it. My prayer for her was my prayer, I hope that you don't. There's nothing wrong with, I wouldn't change my process for anything in the world, because the little boy that's walking around here is the end result. So if I did it all over again and I could repeat the whole thing, I would still do two cycles of IVF. I would still hope that they both fail, and I would still hope we go through the same process if I was guaranteed that 3.5-year-old walking around here would be where he is. I've asked and he said no, so. Are we done? Any more questions? Thank y'all so much. Thank y'all.
Thank you again. I echo Monica's comments. Thank y'all so much for coming and for hearing that story. I just wanted to make an impassioned plea, because in the boxing, you know, you have not because you ask not. So I'm going to ask a couple of things of you. Monica was and is a successful labor and employment attorney. And I happen to be the head of human resources for a marketing company in St. Petersburg. I'm 30 years into a career, a chief HR officer. I'm saying all that to say that we are far from rich, we're not wealthy, but we don't work for anything. We have been blessed in our lives. We have a beautiful home, beautiful children, beautiful cars, and a beautiful life. So the book itself is really not about a revenue-generating thing for us, per se. I believe that we will sell a lot of books because I believe that our story is we're being obedient by telling that story. But I can't go anywhere and share with professional people, black and white people, our journey, and they say, well, we want to know more. Well, we have someone, a friend of ours, that is also going through this, or we were considering adopting ourselves, but we hear all these bad stories. So everywhere we go, we always hear people who want more information. And so I'm going to ask, the book is only $10, didn't I?
$99.
So the book is $10. Buy two books. Buy one for yourself. Obviously, you can share the story with your own children and your own family and your own circle. But also buy a book for somebody else. Because again, once you share with them that, oh, I got a chance to go to this book signing, and there's this lady who's attorney and she adopted a black boy, I guarantee you it's going to spur some conversation. And it is nice to be able to have the book to give to someone else. That's the reason why we did this, because it is a ministry. So I'm going to ask you to do that.
Sorry, this is life. To piggyback off of that, in terms of sharing the book, I had a lay sister who bought two books, and she didn't know why she bought the other book. And she went to church, and there was a woman who was dedicating, her family was dedicating the baby that had just adopted. And so she was like, that's why I was supposed to buy the second book. And so she came to church the next day and gave the book to the woman. I don't even know this woman. I'm on this Christian Adoptions group on Facebook, and I shared the book on the Christian Adoptions Facebook page. The woman that she gave that book to said, oh my God, that's you? And she told me the story about how this woman had given her the book in church and how it had completely blessed her life, and she was so thankful for it. So I didn't interrupt you, but I'd have to piggyback on that. And then on top of that, in addition to buying a book, which we had, thank you in advance, I enjoy telling my story. I don't have a problem driving home 2 hours, driving over to Orlando. So if there's another group that y'all want me to talk to, I like to talk, as y'all can tell. I'll drive, it's just gas. But to me, it is a way for me to share this ministry with other people. I'm not a preacher, don't profess to be. I still cuss and I drink. But I believe this is what God told me. So there's some preachers that cuss and drink too, so maybe I should speak up. I believe this is what God has purposed me to do, which is why I'm doing it. And so to the extent that there are groups that you like, or even small, it can be a group talking in somebody's house. I don't have a problem doing that, so I just want to.
Thank you. There's also, the second thing I'm going to ask you, there's an email address on these cards. It's on nwharris@fairadvisor.com. So when you do run across individuals, then even if you don't have a book to give to them or turn them on to the book, and they want to talk to someone openly about adoption or about black adoption, by all means, just, you know, give them this email address. My cell phone number is not on here, but even if it's a man, to Bella's point, who wants to talk to another man about adoption because he's, you know, having some questions, or his significant other is thinking about adopting. Our pastor contacted me about another couple that he knows. They already have children, but he has children and she doesn't, and they've heard all these horror stories about adoption. And so we literally connected with them. I had a conversation with the husband first. We had a long conversation. He wanted to know if I would mind giving his wife my phone number to talk to my wife. I said, absolutely. And as it turns out, they have not had a long conversation. We have never met these people. We don't know them from Adam. But I'm saying all this to say, the reason why we're doing this is because if it results in an adoption of a child, not just a baby, but of a child that needs a forever home, then we will feel like that we've done our done what's possible. So that's the second priority. I don't know whether Ruben's going to do this or not. I've never been here before. I just kind of walked around. I didn't get the informative tour. This place is fantastic. Like, this place is amazing. It really is amazing. We really thank you guys so much for having us. I just found out I walked past a little connection plate they got set up there for donations. So take a picture of it. If you want to drop a dollar in the thing too, but we're better than that. There is a PayPal and credit card donation. I'm gonna personally bless this ministry, because I'm telling you, look around and just the history of how deep this is. That's what we need to do. We need to support this kind of thing, because they agreed to host us and for this purpose. And so it's good to talk about it, but it's also good to be about it. So I'm going to ask you to please, if you would, bless this museum as well. So
now,
if
we have, did anybody get a ticket?
Did
we get tickets? Oh, okay. So one of the other things I do when I do these book talks is I try to support black businesses, more specifically Wattlers. So we have two things. Right. So nothing wrong with any other HBCU, but that's where I got my degree from, so that's what I'm going to do. So we also have t-shirts for sale, and the designers and the makers of the t-shirts are these two beautiful people back here, Marcette and Michelle back here. And so the shirts are for sale. They're $19.99. They're children's shirts. And they say, "I am brilliant," with Isaac on the front. Apparently, I need to make some girl shirts, because I was asked. I'm sorry. I got it. It's on my list of things to do. She's looking at me like, so that's the other thing. And then we're going to pass out. There's a young lady. Does anybody have a nut allergy before I pass them out? Okay. There's a sister in Tallahassee. Her name is Thais Wilson. She's married to Von Wilson. She makes the best candy pecans. So in Tampa, we gave away gourmet popcorn that was made by the daughter of a Rattler. Today, we're giving away canned pecans made by a Rattler, and her information is contained on there. And so please support these businesses. Michael Madison Designs is their company. And this, I think it's Thais Sweet Treats. Homemade sweets. So she makes sweet potato. Apparently, if you go to homecoming and you don't get this, then you're not really a Rattler. And I got tired of getting called out, so I have them now. But they are fabulous. They're fabulous. Oh, and the radio station is
98.5 The Wire.
And then for those individuals who came in a little tardy to the party, which is fine, so far we're just going to kick in. There's cookies and drinks back there. Please eat them, take them, so we don't want them.
They're not going to take them, and they can't stay here.
And they can't stay here, so, right.
Everybody get cookies.
So get cookies, please. I'm around to talk, hug, sign books. Thank y'all so much again.
And I believe in protocol, so I think we were supposed to have this venue until 3. Get your cookies, hold each other, Nick. Jesus.
We're not
going to
put you out immediately.
Yeah, not immediately, but I want to. And schedule a time to come back and do the actual welfare. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone.
She's saying don't worry.
Don't be talking bad about us now.
I know.
They came and left all the chairs all over.